Chapter 15. Jean-Luc Brunel. The French Connection. Thucea Huysmans arrived at the apartment on Avenue Foch, near the Arc de Triomphe in Paris, just as she'd been instructed. The 18-year-old aspiring model carried only a small backpack of possessions and 3 photos of herself. Not much to begin a new life, but the man she was going to live with had a reputation for making superstars. It would surely be worth it. The apartment was as grand on the inside as its facade suggested, with antique furniture and paintings covering the walls. Its owner was equally impressive in his way. Urbane, charming, softly spoken, and every inch the gentleman. Jean-Luc Brunel had met the young Dutch girl in a chocolate shop in Brussels and invited her to Paris to stay in his apartment. Thucea had initially thought the offer was strange, but her agents had urged her to accept it. This was the man who had launched the careers of Monica Bellucci, Sharon Stone, Christy Turlington, and Jerry Hall, after all. But when Thucea entered the apartment, she noticed the warning signs immediately. Many of the other girls who were staying there, some of whom she recognized from magazines, looked distinctly underage. They all had a sad look about them, and Thucea sensed they were being forced to sleep with the middle-aged Frenchman. Brunel began flirting with her straight away, joking that they would one day be married, and they would soon have sex. When she asked him where she would be sleeping, he told her, his bed, of course. Thucea managed to get through the first night, sleeping under a blanket on the floor of another girl's room. Part of her was screaming to get out, but another part of her just told her she had to stay careful and ride this through. It was the opportunity of a lifetime. Despite her reservations, Thucea was soon caught up in the lifestyle of an up-and-coming model. There were test shoots, castings, and endless parties. At one point, Brunel offered to hook Thucea up with his friend, Harvey Weinstein, for a career in the movies. On another occasion, she met a man in a black turtleneck sweater that she now thinks was Jeffrey Epstein. The inevitable came one night at an after-party at the apartment. Brunel gave Thucea a drink. He said he'd mixed especially for her. She drank it and immediately started to feel woozy. The rest of the night's events ran like a kind of blurry slow-motion movie with tiny moments of horrific clarity. Brunel taking her to his room, lying her on the bed and telling her to relax. The sound of her blouse being ripped open, wanting to struggle but being unable to move, and the feeling of something pushing between her legs. Thucea woke the next morning wrapped in a kimono that wasn't hers, with her clothes in a pile on the floor. Her inner thighs were marked and bruised. She got dressed, grabbed her backpack from the other room, and ran out of the apartment while Brunel was on the phone. Outside, Thucea felt like the houses were moving and had a deep sense of disconnection from reality. Her world had been turned upside down. Her dream shattered. She was just another victim of the conveyor belt of abuse. Huysmans was one of dozens, maybe hundreds, perhaps even thousands of young models who fell prey to Jean-Luc Brunel. The story was always the same. First they were charmed, seduced, and dazzled by the high life, plied with drink, drugs, and endless parties. If none of these encouraged them to succumb to Brunel's sexual desires, then it would be a spiked drink and a half-remembered traumatic nightmare. This was the man who became Epstein's go-to supplier of beautiful, usually underage, women, trafficking them across the Atlantic on the promise of glittering modelling careers, only to find themselves being forced to pleasure the sexual appetites of a perverted old man. The pipeline was so prolific that Epstein boasted of sleeping with over 1,000 of Brunel's models, 3 of whom, according to Virginia Dufresne, were 12-year-old triplets, given as a birthday present. Yet until the end of 2020, this serial child abuser and trafficker was never charged with any crimes in France. Even when several media exposés revealed what he was doing. When asked about Brunel, most people who knew him only had good things to say about him, mentioning his charming, gentlemanly and soft-spoken manner. Yes, he was a bit of a party animal and a ladies' man, but who wouldn't be given his position and proximity to so many beautiful women? It becomes clear from the testimony of those who knew and worked with Brunel that he had two sides to his personality. The charming, pleasant side, which his associates saw, and the darker, abusive aspect, which only his victims witnessed. Whatever the case, he clearly lived a kind of charmed life. How did this diminutive Frenchman come to be in such a position of power over so many women, and what were his deeper links to the murky world of Epstein? Born in 1946 in Paris, Brunel was originally named Jean-Luc Charles Raymond Benchamol, according to French Epstein researcher Frédéric Ponton, La French Connection on Twitter and YouTube. His family were originally of North African Jewish descent. Like Robert Maxwell, Brunel may well have changed his name to escape anti-Semitic prejudice while trying to make a name for himself in post-war Paris. Brunel had a brother, Arnaud, and their father was a real estate manager to the elite, so the two children were brought up around the glitz, glamour, and wealth of Parisian high society. Brunel clearly inherited his father's taste for the high life. He loved to party and socialise, to be surrounded by the most beautiful objects and, of course, women. He married twice, first to the Swedish model, Helen Hogberg, and then to American model, Roberta Chirko. Both marriages ended in divorce. Given his tastes, Brunel was perhaps destined for a career in the fashion industry. His first experience came in 1974, when he met Claude François, a famous French pop singer who hired Brunel as a model scout for his new modelling agency, Girls. Working for François, Brunel travelled around Europe, scouring the continent for beautiful women. In 1975, Brunel took a hiatus from his modelling career and moved to Ibiza, where he opened a bar with his first wife, Helen Hogberg. But the move did not become permanent, and Brunel returned to Paris in 1977, where he joined Karin Mossberg's elite modelling agency, Karin Models. As his marriage fell apart, Brunel's career began to flourish. The following year, he became head of Karin Models, and in the next 10 years, he claimed to discover the likes of Mila Jovovich, Christy Turlington, and Sharon Stone. However, his decade at the top of the game was to end in controversy. In 1988, he was the subject of a 60 Minutes investigation in which several American models described the culture of drugging and sexual exploitation that Brunel fostered. And in another investigative program, Brunel's long-term use of cocaine was exposed. According to many models, Brunel's exploits were well known throughout the fashion industry. Models were at first seduced, then coerced, and if they resisted, finally drugged and raped. And those who refused were denied work and found their careers floundering. Although he wasn't formally charged, Brunel's reputation had taken a severe blow, and in the same year, he and brother Arnaud left France for America, where they set up their own modelling agency, Next Management Corporation. The following year, they partnered with Faith Cates and Joel Wilkenfeld to create a global brand, Next Management Company, with Brunel becoming the head of the Miami branch. It was around this time that Brunel first met Jeffrey Epstein, probably in the year 1993 or 1994, according to Ponton. Although Brunel and Epstein's infamous trafficking partnership wasn't to start for another decade, the two clearly had already established a close relationship with the name Jean-Luc Brunel, or JBL, appearing on the flight logs of the Lolita Express more than 25 times between 1999 and 2005. Controversy continued to follow Brunel in the US, and in 1996, he and Arnaud were forced to separate from Next when they were accused of siphoning models from the agency to their own newly formed company, Karen Models of America. In 1999, Brunel was the subject of a BBC McIntyre undercover report into sexual abuse in the fashion industry. And in 2002, supermodel Karen Mulder mentioned his name in association with the prevalent sexual misconduct and abuse within the Paris fashion world. In 2003, Brunel's two major funders, his brother, Arnaud, and his business partner, Etienne de Royes, pulled out. And in 2004, he was forced to change the name from Karen Models of America after the Paris office filed to revoke the name. At this time, things were looking bad for Brunel. He was living in an apartment in Trump Tower and was basically broke. This was when Epstein stepped in. According to Ponton, Epstein and Brunel first attempted to set up a partnership with Elite Models and Donald Trump. Brunel probably knew Trump through their mutual friend, Paolo Zampoli. It was Zampoli who introduced Trump to his now wife, Melania. When this attempt fell through, Epstein provided $1 million of funding for Brunel to continue with his own agency. MC2 Model Management was born, the name being a subtle reference to Epstein, the missing E coming from Einstein's famous equation, E equals MC squared. MC2 opened offices in New York and Miami, and also a base in Tel Aviv, Israel. According to Ponton, the Tel Aviv office was nothing but a front, with business addresses linked to nondescript properties in residential streets. Given Epstein's close association with the Mossad, this provides an interesting link between the Israeli intelligence service and Epstein and Brunel's sex trafficking operation, an operation that now went into overdrive. According to Ponton, with MC2 set up, Brunel now began travelling widely across Eastern Europe, South America, and the former Soviet bloc to find young and underage models for MC2 and Epstein. The girls were brought in on valid working visas where possible, but often, according to Ponton, Brunel would smuggle them in on tourist visas, a practice that Epstein became increasingly angry about as he knew the risks it involved. Such a victim was Nadia Marcinkova, who was brought into the States at the age of 14 and housed at Mark Epstein's 66th Street apartment before going on to become Virginia Giuffre's replacement as Epstein's masseuse and sex slave. The fact that underage girls were coming into the States under the cover of modelling agencies is confirmed by the testimony of Miles and Kathy Alexander, who managed Little St. James Island from 1999 to 2007. According to the couple, numerous girls were brought to the island under the cover of modelling work, with some of the most obvious underage being smuggled onto the island by boat to circumvent immigration laws. As we have seen, Brunel provided a steady stream of these models for Epstein's private entertainment, and he clearly knew that many, if not most of these, were under the legal age of consent, as is evidenced by several handwritten notes taken down by Epstein's assistants following phone calls from Brunel. One such note from 2005 reads, "He has a teacher to teach you to speak Russian. She is 2 times 8 years old, not blonde. Lessons are free, and you can have the first one today if you call." These girls were housed in rooms at Mark Epstein's 66th Street apartment block in New York, with up to 4 girls per apartment. Brunel charged the girls rent at $1,000 a month, and Brunel and Epstein took a 30% cut of their earnings. Outside the modelling agency, it was clear that Epstein and Brunel enjoyed more than just a professional relationship. In his legal testimony, former Palm Beach house manager, Janish Banasiak, said that Brunel would often visit the house and even make lunch for himself in the kitchen. And when Epstein was sentenced to 13 months in jail, Brunel visited him no less than 67 times. Indeed, it was during Epstein's first investigation by Florida police that the two were perhaps closest. When Brunel was asked to provide testimony for the investigation in 2009, he played a game of cat and mouse through his lawyer, always ensuring that he was abroad and unavailable to talk. 6 years later, Brunel himself admitted that it was Epstein who had asked him to leave the region and go to Europe or Asia to delay the testimony. This admission came in 2015, when their relationship had clearly changed for the worse. Brunel sued Epstein for damaging the reputation of his brand, but the case came to nothing. Brunel claimed that he was also a victim of Epstein, as the financier had helped him relaunch his career as a model agent, so he owed him a debt. According to Ponton, during the case, Brunel's lawyer, Joe Titone, claimed that Brunel had lots of pictures with Epstein and his friends, and that many of them included young girls. Brunel agreed to supply these photographs, but seems to have promptly changed his mind, quickly leaving the country. Brunel was last seen in public on the night before Epstein's arrest, partying at the exclusive Paris Country Club, although it was widely reported that Brunel had gone into hiding, possibly in Brazil. He was, in fact, in France, preparing his defence with his lawyer, Corinne Dreyfus-Schmidt. On September the 17th, 2019, French police searched the offices of Carin Models in the 8th arrondissement of Paris. But it seemed nothing was found. Its manager, Ruth Malka, Brunel's right-hand woman for many years before taking over the agency, says she never knew anything about Jean-Luc Brunel's attitude towards young women. Brunel was arrested on December the 16th at Paris's Charles de Gaulle Airport, carrying a one-way ticket to Dakar in Senegal. He was charged with multiple rapes against Virginia Dufray and one charge of sexual harassment against an unknown accuser in 2016. Dufray's testimony was crucial, because two of her rape allegations occurred in 2000 and 2001, meaning they were within France's 20-year statute of limitations for such offences. Unfortunately, most of Brunel's misdemeanours, for which victims have been willing to step forward, seem to have occurred in the 70s, 80s and 90s, thus falling outside the statute of limitations. Among the other complaints filed against Brunel were those of 10 alleged victims reported in 2019. The most recent was a young French woman in her 20s, who described being sexually harassed by Brunel within the last 4 years. A former model for Carin Models, Courtney Sorensen, told the French press how Brunel sexually assaulted her after weeks of sexual harassment. She described how he lured her into his bedroom at the Avenue Froche apartment, on the pretext of showing her some pictures. Then, he tried to push me on his bed. I resisted. He persisted. He then tried violently to undo my shirt. I managed to escape from the room. After the incident, Sorensen described how casting and photo shoots dried up for her, and she was forced to change agency. New Zealand model Zoe Brock also reported being sexually assaulted by Brunel and to have been professionally punished for managing to escape. And as we have heard, Virginia Dufray has alleged that she was forced to have sex with Brunel several times over a 3-year period, as well as being forced to partake in lesbian orgies for Brunel's sexual pleasure with dozens of other girls, mostly foreign models from MC2, many of whom looked underage. Despite multiple allegations of sexual abuse and links to Epstein's sex trafficking operation, Brunel's influence, it seems, still lives on within the fashion industry. Although MC2 New York has closed, and the Miami office is reportedly about to shut down, Brunel seems to have been involved in the setting up of at least 3 new modeling agencies. The Identity Models in New York, the Source Models in Miami, and one mother agency in Kiev, Ukraine. The Identity was supposedly founded in New York in 2017 by Mathias Pardot, a French-born talent scout who is listed as vice president of the company. The identities of the president or any other executives of the Delaware incorporated firm aren't publicly known. Pardot, who worked for Brunel as a talent scout at MC2, claims that Brunel had nothing to do with the founding of the new agency. However, according to a report by the Daily Beast, one identity model allegedly joined Pardot at New York's Mercer Kitchen for a meet and greet that included only one other person, Jean-Luc Brunel. According to the model's mother, Leah Assenmacher, the young woman showed both men her portfolio before the rendezvous at the Chic Soho restaurant. The model told her mother that Brunel was very polite and drank a lot of champagne as they made small talk about the fashion world. During their conversation, Assenmacher claimed Brunel and Pardot indicated that MC2 would cease operations and the Identity would take its place. The girl signed a contract with the Identity soon after. She felt that Jean-Luc Brunel was the final arbiter of whether she was signed. Assenmacher told the Daily Beast. Mathias was deferential to him. Further evidence comes from the fact that initially the Identity operated out of MC2's offices in West 14th Street. The only ones working for the Identity were Mathias and Jean-Luc Brunel, a former MC2 employee told the Daily Beast. The Identity also shares the same attorney as MC2, Ian Ilyich Martinez of Florida, and houses its models at the same East Village apartment once used by MC2. Martinez also represents the Source Models and One Mother Agency, both of which have been linked to Brunel. And the Identity and MC2 share models together as well as one common talent agent, a former MC2 employee called Vinicius Freire. The Source Models in Miami is run by Petra Pedraza and Jeff Fuller, who deny any links between Brunel and the company. However, the MC2 office in Miami is currently in the process of transferring its assets to the Source, according to the Daily Beast. Fuller was Brunel's longtime business partner at MC2, and the contact email listed on the Source's Instagram page is an mc2models.com address. Also, Fuller's wife, Hilary Altman, is the registered agent for the Ukrainian One Mother Agency in Florida, which has links to Brunel. A representative of the Source told the Daily Beast that Brunel's connection with One Mother was limited to an initial loan to help set up the company, which has now been paid off. However, 2 One Mother models told the Daily Beast that they thought Brunel was the owner, and they saw him regularly in the Kiev office. An Ukrainian model scout, Vladimir Yudashkin, told the Daily Beast that he co-founded One Mother with Brunel and that the agency was Brunel's idea. Yudashkin claimed Brunel set up One Mother to funnel Ukrainian models to MC2 in New York by making them think it was the best fit for their careers, without telling them that the two agencies were financially linked. Yudashkin told the Daily Beast he quit working for Brunel in 2017 when he could no longer face lying to the models. So, Brunel's influence clearly lives on, as probably does Epstein's. The French authorities launched their own investigation into Epstein in 2019, but it seems to have made little progress. One problem, according to Ponton, with both the Epstein investigation and the lack of victims coming forward to testify against Brunel, is the culture of silence within the French fashion industry. Ponton refers to this as omerta, the Italian mafia's code of silence, which prevents people speaking to the authorities. However, more sinister methods may also have been in play. On October 3, 2019, three police officers and an administrative worker were stabbed to death at the Paris headquarters of the DRPP, the Intelligence Directorate of the Prefecture of Police, just 1 month after the same department had issued a call for Epstein victims to come forward. The attack was carried out by Mikhail Harpon, a 45-year-old IT specialist at the DRPP. Harpon, who was deaf, was shot dead at the scene by another officer. The police and press quickly painted the massacre as an act of terrorism. Harpon had converted to Islam 10 years previously and had supposedly started exhibiting radical tendencies. However, Ponton questions how a middle-aged man with physical disabilities could have overpowered three fully fit and trained police officers with just a ceramic knife. Could it instead have been the case that Harpon had come across some extremely sensitive material linking Epstein with powerful paedophile rings in France? Might Harpon have shared this material with his colleagues, necessitating that they all be taken out in an incident made to look like a classic lone gun terrorist attack? There are some interesting connections between Epstein and high-profile figures in France, who have dubious reputations with regards to children. One of these is former culture and education minister Jacques Lang. Lang's name has cropped up many times in connection with paedophiles, although he's never been formally charged. In 1977, he signed a letter in French newspaper Le Monde written in defence of three men imprisoned for sexually abusing 12 and 13-year-old girls. The letter was written by a French writer called Gabriel Matzneff, who was famous for writing about his passion for paedophilia. Then, in 1982, Lang's name was raised in relation to the infamous Coral Affair, in which children at an education centre near Nîmes, many of them with autism and other disabilities, were subjected to a horrific culture of abuse and paedophilia. Lang was also a long-time supporter and friend of suspected paedophile Woody Allen and convicted paedophile Roman Polanski. And in 2011, Lang's name was mentioned by former French domestic intelligence chief Yves Bertrand in connection with a paedophile orgy in Morocco. Lang first met Epstein at a dinner in celebration of Woody Allen and was a guest at Epstein's Avenue Froche apartment in March 2019, shortly before Epstein's arrest. Lang invited him to the 30th anniversary of the Louvre's glass pyramid. But there were more than social ties between the two men. In 2018, Lang co-founded an organization that translates as Association for the Promotion of National Cultural Policy conducted in the 80s and 90s of the 20th century. This non-profit's vague-sounding goal was to promote the major leaders and achievements of these decades, cultural policy. The organization has no website or social media presence, and the French Observatory of Cultural Policies, a national body closely involved in cultural life across France, said it had never heard of the non-profit. Despite its vague title and goals, and its shadowy existence, Lang's organization received a $57,879 donation from Gratitude America Limited, an equally nebulous organization set up by Jeffrey Epstein, with a $10 million donation by American investor Leon Black, another name that pops up frequently in regard to Epstein. The other donations Epstein's non-profit made before his arrest were to a sex clinic in Rome and a Lithuanian ballet company. If the connection between Epstein and Lang's organization seems shady, so too do the links to the French government. Not only is the co-founder, Lang, the former culture minister, but the group's treasurer, Jacques Renard, was deputy director and chief of staff under Lang's culture ministry, and its president, Christophe Degruel, worked as Lang's chief of staff in the education ministry from 2000 to 2002. It seems valid to speculate about the real motives of Lang's non-profit and about Epstein's interest in it. Did it involve the abuse of minors and the protection and funding of high-level paedophile rings in France? France, according to Ponton, is rapidly becoming an international haven for paedophilia and child trafficking. Child porn is big business in the country, with videos sold for up to €1 million on the dark web. There were 51,287 reports of disappearances of minors in 2019 alone. And investigating high-level paedophilia in France is a dangerous game, according to Ponton, with the disappearance or death of many researchers who shot too close to the mark. Perhaps this is why, according to Ponton's research, Epstein was planning on returning to France not long before he was arrested. Perhaps it is also the reason that his paedophile partner in crime, Jean-Luc Brunel, evaded justice for so long in the country of his birth.